Hey there, guys. We are releasing two episodes this week focusing on the various team environments. This is part one. Don't worry if you've stumbled on part two first. You can listen to both of these in any order. Without further ado, let's get into the show. Hello everyone and welcome back to the Esports Roundtable podcast, where we discuss the past, present and future of all things business in esports. I'm your host, Joe Hills from Looking for Group, and today we have a very special guest joining us to tell his story and dive into his experiences. He's responsible for being pretty much the one-man band behind elevating Unicorns of Love to their international success over the course of the last few years. You've probably seen him more times with his shirt off than on, and in a variety of different costumes. The one, the only, Roman Bijat. Roman, is that how I pronounce your name, or have I completely destroyed it?
So the French pronunciation is Romain Bijat.
Roman
Bijat.
No, okay, cool.
It's impossible for with an English accent. I was laughing because it's as much as I would like this presentation to be true, I'm far from the main reason was why Unicorns of Love was successful, and I have to give a lot of credit to basically Jos Malan and Shippy Malan, the founder and CEO of the team. And there were three people working together and basically dealing with all problems together. So I ended up being the face on stage.
Okay.
So obviously the one people are going to talk about, but nothing would have been made possible without Jos behind as a brain, as an executive slash administrative part. And GP obviously coaching, but we're gonna discuss it a bit.
Yeah, of course. I've always been quite interested to understand how these basically family esports teams have operated. So we'll definitely get to that in a few moments. But before we get started on exploring, you know, your experience with Unicorns of Love, your philosophy towards actually managing and inspiring an esports team, and also your recent move to the US, why don't you just take us through your journey, how you got to where you are now, and also how you started working for Unicorns of Love in the first place?
From the start.
Absolutely.
shit. Because I don't even know the English word for in German it's Abitur. In French, it's baccalauréat. It's the diploma at the end of your high school.
Yeah, yeah, the IB, yeah.
The IB, okay. So you have to specialize yourself. And I started with chemistry. Then I switched to a bachelor in history to end up with a master degree in business. So I've been doing a couple of stuff, studying a bit, whatever I could find. I really liked anything connected to storytelling, marketing, communication, events, people, stuff like that. But obviously, I had no clue what kind of job I could find, gathering all those aspects. I met a couple of people with really crazy ideas about life and job and stuff, and I ended up realizing, what do I really, really like? Well, I like playing video games. Am I good at it? No. Can I create video games? No. So my options were quite limited. So what am I good at? I'm good at being happy and making other people happy. So that's probably going to be something around management / business. That's how I entered a business school, with already the idea to work in the video game industry. Back then, esports was quite small, so I went to events first. Paris Games Week, for example, I did internship into a PR agency. From the PR agency, I went to Activision Blizzard. I was a marketing intern there. I got so lucky because this specific year where I was an intern, Mist of Pandaria was released, StarCraft 2 was released, Diablo 3 was released, all those insane games.
Sure.
So I had the luck to work on a couple of really different projects, and esports was slowly but surely growing. StarCraft 2 was actually leading the pack. League of Legends was really small. I remember how the StarCraft scene was trash-talking LOL all the time. Like, this game is never going to go anywhere. This game sucks, blah, blah, blah. It's no skill. and so on and so on. Fast acceleration 5 years later. StarCraft is dead. League of Legends is the biggest game in the world. So I'm really curious what's going to happen in 5-10 years. But yeah, so from Activision Blizzard, I moved to Razer as an intern in Germany. I had amazing colleagues, and esport kept growing and growing. So event, that's the switch from video games event to esport event. What's the main difference? Well, people used to go to events just to play video games and to see new release and stuff like that. And slowly but surely, they started to go to events to watch other people play games, which is esport, basically.
Of course.
So that was really, really interesting. The booming of DreamHack, ESL, all those stuff. And then I finished my master degree and I had to find a job after all those internships. So Razer was actually the kind of created the esport position in Europe for me. So I was under the lead of Drew Holt-Kendwell, really, really great guy. He was the director of esport for Razer. At one point in my wallet of teams, because basically as an esport guy for a company like Razer, you are dealing with a budget and you have to get the best return on investment. So you open an investment into teams and you have to put your brand everywhere. And one of those teams who came into Razer was Unicorns of Love. They just qualified and they had no real idea about business. Luckily, it was my job actually to know how to do a bit of business in esports. So I quit. I just left Razer to go to Unicorns. Okay. Which was, by the time, I remember people telling me, but that's a terrible idea. Why would you do that, leaving such a big company as Razer to go to an esport team, bro? Why would you do that? And God bless I did. Esport kept growing and growing, and League of Legends is now the biggest game in the world. And it's really, really interesting. And yeah, I spent 2 years and a half with UL. Really interesting organization, family business, like literally family, because basically when Unicorns of Love qualified, they had the choice to either sell the team to someone else. I remember back then Team Liquid was looking to invest into League of Legends, Dignitas, all those people were around the business trying to buy, sell, do stuff like that. But GP Malan has a really genius father called Jos Malan, and Jos has big business history. He has been through several companies all over the world. So he told his son, "Look, I know how to run a company. Keep it. We're gonna run on a really tight budget, but let's go on an adventure." So the Malan family is basically Unicorns of Love. So I integrated like literally my first interview was with Shippy in the gaming house. That was an formal interview. My second interview was at the Malan house. It was a dinner with the mother, the father, the sister, and then the two cats around. And it was more an interview about what kind of human I was rather than what kind of businessman I could be, which is actually esport right now, because no one is an esport expert at the moment. It's always funny when you see people coming around the table explaining, "Look, I've been doing esport for 15 years. Esport is really relevant for how long? 2-3 years? Like with big budget, with big reach, with big stuff like that. The few people who could really call themselves esport expert, you know them. They are like 100,000 followers on Twitter and that's it basically. So anyone else, they are rookie. We have no clue what we are doing.
Of course.
Which is amazing. Yeah, it's we're all adventure. We are the Christoph Columbus in a new business. So we're all improvising, and that's why anyone who would like to do esports right now, they can. There is no prerequisite. Like just go. And if you have any kind of new fresh blood, it's going to be a blessing for this industry because it's so new. So
it's been one of the things that I kind of had to wrap my head around starting up, looking for group almost a year and a half ago and stepping into the esports industry about 4 years ago, was it's such a tight-knit and narrow community that in one way or another, you know, if you're a fresh face and if people don't already know you, then it's very easy to be dismissed. So I found like a massive problem to what, understand how to communicate like my personal brand or what my aims were for the space in a genuine and direct way that people would actually believe me. Because a lot of the time, like stepping in from a 30-year-old executive search agency from London with no prehistory in esports or gaming, I basically had to talk at people about how much I knew the games and how I'd like built clans and split up clans and, you know, lots of irrelevant Half-Life 2 mods and that sort of thing to really like show that I had the fan credentials first before we even started talking business. So it's been very interesting. And a lot of those people that I've spoken to that have said, oh, mate, I've been in esports for 15, 20 years. A lot of those people are now like really close friends and actually some of my mentors. But there are others that have been completely dismissive and have actually quite a small-minded approach to, you know, if you weren't at the cyber games back in the 90s, then, you know, you're not anyone. Or, you know, if you aren't personal friends with a fatality when he won 50 grand in a sports car, then, you know, you're not an esports veteran. So it's a very interesting time. And I think that aspect of the space is definitely going to change with all of the franchising that's coming over the last few years, with all of the new faces and the new money and the new strategy, that I think a lot of people are going to have to change that perspective to stay relevant, really, and stay active. So very, very interesting journey from your side.
Absolutely. I see kind of two speed. Is it speed or some speed? Two pace in esports. Like you have the slow evolution from small event to medium event to bigger event, connected to specific game, connected to specific company, and they were all friends. Like if you would go to any European event, it's the same people all over the place, and they all knew each other and stuff. But have the feeling like Riot Games was they are kind of disconnected from that, because they decided quite early to cut themselves from most of the events / other company in the business to create their own stuff and to control everything by recruiting other people. So I have the feeling they grow faster, way faster, and on their own. And they are the people right now in the front line to talk to sponsors, to partner and stuff. Like Blizzard is catching up with Overwatch, and by recruiting so many brilliant people and launching their own leagues. But it took a bit of time, so it's accelerating, that's for sure. Where is it gonna go? I have no clue. What's the game of the future? Maybe it's not Overwatch, maybe it's not LoL, but the people in the industry are gonna be the same now. And I have the feeling we are experiencing a transition from I'm hiring my friends to I'm hiring professionals, which was much needed. Well, actually, before you had no other choice because we had not enough cash to hire professionals.
Yeah, so those people from outside the space didn't even know what esports was anyway. So where did they get on board? It's just like it was almost like a pipe dream or a flash in the pan for those people. They didn't have the wide enough span of evidence to really be sold. You've got so many people that I've spoken to about esports over the last few years that have said, wait, what is that? People playing games? Are you serious? And then it's kind of like almost the conversation goes flat. Or if I try and speak to people like four roles in Riot that I've actually worked on, like in Europe, for their commercial director, I spoke to a bunch of people from sports and entertainment. And there were only a few that had the kind of the pace of mind or the openness to really evaluate the opportunity and the kind of evidence that I was putting in front of them about how quickly this is growing. This is millions of players that are watching, millions of players that are playing. And they got excited. But a lot of them were like, yeah, don't play games. So, you know, I used to play a bit of FIFA, not really where I want to go. And that's perfectly fine. But
is FIFA a really sport game?
It's an interesting thing. I don't think it is, but I think that the definition of what esports is going to be is going to slightly change based on the kind of aims for these sports infrastructures stepping in. You know, League of Legends, Dota, Counter-Strike, Overwatch, maybe PUBG. This is the kind of pure high-level, super tactical and strategic, high-mechanics esports games that'll be pure as to, you know, how esports has moved in the past. What you're going to see with the NBA 2K League and with FIFA and with Madden and with the MLS. This is more about engagement than it's about getting millions of players actually watching. It's bolting on to engaging with a younger community and maybe not pulling on these tournaments that are going to fill out the Barclays Center in New York. It's the actual aims of what esports is for them, at least for the next few years, I think is going to be quite different. It's going to be very much about giving fans experience and a way to access these brands rather than building like this next generation wave of sport, which I think the Pure titles are doing.
So the future is coming. To me, it's VR. Like it's funny because that's something I was already saying like a year ago, but to me, the ultimate esport game is going to be in a stadium. And if you can find or create a technology allowing you to turn the pitch into a 3D laser projection, and you put on the side of the pitch the players in a box, you know, with a headset, with a suit, with gloves, with feet, and like you have now those kind of specific room where it doesn't matter wherever they walk, they're gonna stay in the middle.
Yeah, it's so on the trackpad.
You can fully recreate something and then make them fight in the middle. It's literally Hunger Games, and the crowd doesn't even have to move in the stadium, because with virtual reality you just have to put a headset on and you can actually see them fighting, and such kind of game would require actually some physical abilities or not, but you could deactivate or activate it, but that would make it a bit more legit maybe to mainstream, and maybe in 5-10 years esports athletes are actually going to be physical athletes because they're going to have to move, and the beauty of such kind of stuff is you can literally fight using dragon, sword, fire, castle, whatever you want. Like you have absolutely no limitation, and at the end of the day that will be a massive technological increase, but you still go back to not middle age, but gladiator. Gladiator is one of the first gigantic, like fighting is the first entertainment ever. I give you a sword, and the first one killing the other one win. Yeah. But we have the technology to not spill blood and to survive the fight. So if you want to spice things up a bit, you can put some electricity in the suit and stuff like that. But,
yeah. I mean, the amount of time that I actually mention mixed martial arts on this podcast, I think it's probably every episode. It's like my producer's smiling at me now, because at any time I'll find a way to mention it. And the fact that you've kind of drawn this back in the future of the potential of VR esports in a stadium, and it's basically just gladiatorial combat or pancration, you know, that resonates a lot with me. And there's some really interesting stuff that's going down in Australia with mixed martial arts with weapons. I've completely forgotten the name, but they wear like a full body suit that has impact sensors everywhere, and you can put like the full graphical readout of it. They're going to do like a video plugin, you know, so there are already things like this being done. But I'm 100% with you. A stadium level VR shooter with everyone like on a trackpad in the future, like I think that's not esport in what we see. That's like the next level of entertainment that has probably been put together in a bunch of sci-fi films that I've seen in the past.
It's actually electronic sports. Yeah. In the proper meaning of it. It's physical activity enhanced by using electronical stuff.
Sure. All right. Well, I would love to stick down that tangent for the rest of the episode, because I think it's super fascinating. But let's mine down into what you've been up to recently. Most of the listeners will be aware of by now that you have exited Unicorns of Love, where you were perfectly happy, you were super engaged, and you have taken up a role as the general manager for League of Legends for Optic Gaming and Infinite in Los Angeles. First of all, congratulations. There's been a massive flow of talent from Europe to North America over the course of the last few months, and I think that Optic were very smart to identify you as someone who could really build that team atmosphere in a new environment for a new organization. Just take us through how you were approached, what spoke to you about the opportunity, and what you've been really inspired by in the first few months of working with Optic and Infinite.
So like being the manager for Unicorns of Love is probably one of the best jobs in the world, because you can move, you can do whatever the fuck you want. You're working directly with Yoss, and Yoss absolutely trusted me. to take care of UOL from a marketing slash communication perspective. I had a really good relationship with CP and stuff, so I had no plan to leave. Let's make it clear. And then one day I get this specific call from an American guy explaining me they are trying to buy a slot for next year. They are called Optic. I have absolutely no clue who Optic is and what Optic is, so I Google it a bit. I see, oh, okay, it's a Call of Duty. Mm-hmm. Not the best esport game. Eh?
Sure.
then I take the Twitter. I see they have like 3 million followers. I'm like, oh, shit. Okay, that's absolutely gigantic. So to give you a comparison, the League of Legends Twitter account is 4 million. Fnatic account is 1 million, and to me, they were by far the biggest in Europe.
Of course.
So I was like, oh, okay, how is it possible to get 3 million followers by mostly being on Call of Duty? And then I realized, okay, maybe the American market, I mean, that's what I have been praising, saying, and explaining in Europe for the last 2 years, is our market is really difficult in Europe. Why? Because we might have 700 million inhabitants. First, not all of them play video games, but second, we speak more than 20 different languages, which makes marketing slash business really hard in terms of activation, reach, and sponsors, and so on and so on. So the US market, on the other hand, is way more accessible because, well, they all speak English. As easy as it sounds, as easy as it is. If you create a video in the US, instantly you can release it everywhere. Everyone's going to be able to understand it. If you create a video in Europe, it has to be located from France, Germany. You have to choose your market, and so on and so on. So,
yeah, of course.
I was, okay, that's really interesting. What am I going to do? And basically everything. So the deal is you come, you can do whatever you want. You have really, really, really big budget to create it compared to whatever you can have in Europe. You can do five to eight times your salary. And the talk we had with the upper management of Optic was like really, really interesting. Like, those are high-level businessmen with really clear idea, with a really human approach of training and stuff. So, like, it was jumping from one dream to another dream, you know. I would have never, ever left Unicorns for a job where I was getting an insane amount of money. I had absolutely free hands to do whatever I wanted, and I was surrounded by really, really good people. So, and it happened, basically. It happened to me. So one of the first thing I did is to call Jos, the Unicorns of Love dad, to explain him, listen, Jos, I have this opportunity. I'm not asking you, I'm not calling you to discuss it. I'm calling you to tell you I'm going to take it. Let's find the smoothest transition for Unicorns of Love. So I stayed like a month and a half after I took the decision with Unicorns of Love to basically close a bit everything I was doing. And I went. So what basically happened is so Riot is turning NA into a franchise system. From 10 teams, only 6 stayed. So it allowed 4 new teams to enter the market. 3 of them are NBA teams. The 4th one is us, Optic. On the last round, so Riot took a lot of time to select those teams. The first things you needed to have, obviously, is money, which Optic has because we have investors. The second thing was reach / marketing / business approach, which Optic has because they have Infinite behind, which is a really, really solid company with a couple of hundred people and so on and so on. And the third thing Riot was asking is League of Legends expertise, which is where I come in because they that's why basically they hired me, because I know a bit how is working a League of Legends team and how the League of Legends ecosystem is working. So they flew me in. That was a really, really interesting trip, this interview with Riot, because I was with the main investor. I was with Chris, the CEO of Infinite. I was with Ryan. I was with Hector. And, I mean, I've I have never told him that, but basically when I arrived, I had no clue who was who. I only knew Chris, the big client. And the first time I met Hector, which is, I mean, for people from Europe, we don't really know who he is, but in the US, he's a bloody legend. And the guy is a walking one-man show. He's insanely intelligent and funny, but also really, he's trying to poke you with his humor, and he's going to see how you're going to react. He's always challenging you. And it was really fun because he's always walking around with his camera. And I just saw this guy walking around with his camera. So, is he a content creator?
I see like all of his blogs. I know. I tune into the Optic podcast, and he's always got it on him, right? He's just very interesting.
And I was like, okay, who is that? And at one point, he was on his Twitter, and I checked it with, yeah, well, what are you doing? Are you posting stuff online? He said, yeah, I'm just posting that. And I checked his name. I put up my phone. I Google him, and he's like 800,000 followers. Like, him alone is bigger than
most esports teams, yeah.
Like, he's almost as big as the whole Europe. And I was like, who the fuck is that? And I started to realize what kind of place I just entered. And we took a private jet because the main investor flew us all to LA to meet Riot. And those guys were insanely clever. And I had a blast. I was amazing. Like, if I had any kind of hesitation / doubt before flying there, like this meeting with those people solved it. Like, I was like, okay. Have I stuck in? Because I'm in, absolutely in. I want to work with you guys. So we had a really, really cool meeting with Riot, and we got the job, basically. Then I flew to the US, and I met everyone, and we started to work. I could do whatever I wanted. So
are we going to be expecting more costume-related social media posts like we saw over the Christmas period? You know, is this going to... Are you still going to be putting yourself out there in, like, the very front of the Optic League branding piece? So what are the priorities with working with these players and you from a marketing side if you've got such a massive Optic brand behind you?
So the... If it worked so well for Unicorns Flow, it's because I have never ever been the priority. Like people started to hear my name, but I was already a Unicorns member for like a year and a half. And what made it so, I think, successful is it was genuine. I already knew my player by heart. I knew my management by heart. I knew Riot by heart as well. I knew everyone backstage. I knew the video guy. I knew the security guy. I knew the light guy. I knew the Riot people. And it was natural because there was fun. There was the right time. There was the right place. So obviously now it's kind of part of my brand, and it's also why I got recruited. I don't know what's gonna happen. I do love it. I love being on stage. I love putting a show. I love making people laugh. I love making people scream downstream. I think it's interesting also for my players because it's funny, because it's like I'm cooking the crowd for them, because at the end of the day, if we are all there, it's because they make people dream by playing the game the way they're playing it. So and they are and they will always be the main focus.
It also takes some of the attention off them, right? You know, if people are anxious about a event, if you're, say, prancing about in whatever costume you choose to wear, then I guess the players are able to focus and aren't, you know, it's not all like a quiet, you know, anxious environment in the arena.
Absolutely. I call it shame training. Why? Because if at any point you don't feel too secure about yourself by being on stage, by having all those people staring at you, just turn your head a bit and see your manager, your friend, the guy living with you on a daily basis, half naked, jumping around stage. You're like, okay, whatever I decide to do now, I will never be as stupid as this guy. So yeah, okay, I'm cool with it. And And I actually don't care. Like, I think it's funny. I think it's funny. I think it's interesting. And I put my heart in it. So, yeah, some people might dislike it. Some are going to enjoy it. At the end of the day, I'm doing it for the guys as well. I think they like it. I think if they are laughing at the end of the day, it means they're happy. And we do have the best job in the world. We have a tendency to forget about it. Because, I mean, it's like any kind of job, you know, you get stuck into daily problems and some problems, sometimes you feel like they are mountains, but at the end of the day, it's not. Like, we're so lucky to do that. So it helps a bit to remind them, chill, let's chill, like, let's have fun, because you don't know the next time you're going to, you don't know for how long you're going to enjoy it. And that's something... Yeah, like I remember last year we went to final in Hamburg with Unikanzelflug, and being on stage was incredible. And when I left the stage that day, I was for the players, it's always a bit different because they are performing on stage and they lost. So of course the loss is terrible. But I was trying to cheer them up and say, like, look, enjoy. You do not know when it's going to be the next time you're going to be on stage. Of course, for them, they are the best. They will always be the best. So they're like, hey, well, what are you talking about, Roman? Like, I'm going to be on stage again next week, and I'm always going to be on stage because I'm the fucking best. But at the end of the day, enjoy it. You don't know. And I had a real job before. I had to wake up with an alarm clock in the morning. I had to report to managers. I had to deal with the budget. I had to live real life, and now I feel a bit unplugged from real life. I think esports, when you are member of a team, is not real life. This is not real life. We have way too much money around us. We have way too few responsibilities, kind of. It's not true. We have responsibilities, but it's not. It's a bit unplugged from real life. I'm not saying it's an easy job, because it's really fast paced, and whatever I'm doing now, I'm not sure I'm still going to be able to do it in 3 months. Because I can be the nicest guy in the world. I can put all my heart into my job. It's still a tournament. And you have a winner and you have a loser. And if in 3 months we lose all our game and we cannot fix the problem, maybe I'm going to be fired. And that's a game. That's why you have to enjoy it. You have to absolutely enjoy what you're living right now, because you don't know what tomorrow is going to happen, what's going to happen tomorrow. And I love it. It makes you feel alive, and it makes players feel alive as well, I believe. Like, that's why at the end of the day, having fun is probably the most important stuff. And when you see really, really, really top players playing on stage, they're smiling. When I mean, maybe Korean players are not the ones smiling the most, but maybe smiling is not the right word. Like, they're having fun, once again. I think having fun is important. In any kind of competitive sport, it's important. Any kind of job, it's important. But it's probably easier in such kind of job.
I mean, that's why I like the mic check content that Riot puts out, because it really shows you the smack talk or the pre-game jokes or the kind of memeing between the players mid-game, and that's always beautiful to see. Like, I know Sneaky from Cloud9 is always throwing some heat in the game, so it's always quite cool to see. We've got a few more questions to run through in a few more areas that I'd really like to pick your brain on. There is more than enough content out about the players themselves, so I'll leave that for now, but I do think that your roster is super interesting if you bear in mind the fact that Cloud9 and Optic were the only two organizations that were fighting for players in both franchising leagues. Then you can see with the Overwatch League being announced first that when it came to budget, you know, you can compete with the kind of money that Team Liquid and others were throwing around, especially from the worlds of professional sport. But I do think that the personalities that you've got on board with Power of Evil, with Arrow, with Arcadian, Zig, and Lemon Nation, I do think it's a really interesting blend. You've got some veterans, you've got some raw talent. I think a lot of people might be, in terms of the power rankings, I think that they might be quite surprised by what you guys can do. There are definitely some rosters that I've been playing together for a lot longer than you guys. So at the start of the split, it might be a pretty rough start. And that's what Arcadian was saying when he was on the Optic podcast. But I'm quite interested to see what stupid cheese strategies he can come up with, especially with Lemon Nation as well, because I know that he loves that. He loves finding these weird picks out of nowhere, and especially in a best of one setting, you know, that's going to be quite interesting.
That's exactly the plan. Like, first, we actually could have fought versus Team Liquid instead of money. Mm. And that's something the investor behind made it quite clear from the beginning. Like, not like we have a limited budget, but it would have been possible to go for a financial war. We were lacking the network, to be honest, because I know everyone in Europe, it's way harder in the US, so yeah, I had to recreate kind of a network. I had to call the other manager. I had to identify what was the fastest way to reach out to people. And by the time I had this network fully functional, some of the deals were already done. I believe we have a really competitive roster. I'm more than happy to be ranked 9th or 10th by everyone.
Because there's no pressure there, right? There's no pressure if you're ranked at 9 or 10th. Yeah, all you can absolutely do is...
Like, if we face TSM tomorrow, the pressure is on them. Because if we lose, it's absolutely expected. I'm not even sure people are going to trash talk us. They're just going to say, yeah, we said it. We told you. Told you we're going to lose. Yeah. Okay, I'm sorry, we lost. But it's not done yet. And it's best of one. And it has been quite a long time. We haven't seen a best of one system in Europe and NA. Quite a long time. No, it's not that long, but if you leave them from a team perspective, each split is a life.
So yeah, of course. Yeah.
It has been like four lives at least since we had a best of one. And it's really different mindset. It's the way you prepare the games, the way you play the games, the way you deal with pressure in game. It's one shot. And even if you play first game, second game, or last game, it's really different. Because in a best of three, best of two system, you kind of have one warm-up game. It doesn't really matter who was playing before, but I have memories of a best of one, and the game, if the game before is a 45-minute game, and if it's a really good game, it makes you want to play League of Legends. Like, we were watching LCK yesterday, and some of the first game were insane. Like you see those guys playing and you're like, okay, I want to play now. I want to play the game now. And in a best of one format, when you're backstage waiting for your turn to get on stage, it can be really, really interesting to see how you're going to battle. And I'm really looking forward, because in a best of one, I believe at the end of the day, it's not going to matter that much that they spend 10 times more money than us to create their team. Yes, on the paper, most of the team in front of us have more achievements. If you take one by one the players and stuff, like, obviously facing a guy like Huni, is something which could be impressive in the top lane. Like, the guy has been 18 always Fnatic. He has been playing with SKT, best team in the world. He's now back in NA. His salary alone is probably the budget for the whole team. But it's a game. It's a game. And it's a team game. And it's a team game under pressure. And everyone is trying new stuff. A lot of things are changing with franchise. A lot of management aspects of the game are changing as well. Like, teams are getting more professional, hiring more people. But are they doing the right stuff? Are we doing the right stuff? Once again, this industry is so new that no one really knows how to efficiently train. We can try to inspire ourselves from football, hockey, basketball, baseball, but those are physical activities. And you can train a bit on your own. Like, for example, let's say you want to train for football or basketball. You can run a lot. Having a good cardio is definitely going to make you a good player. In League of Legends, it's different, because being a good solo queue player does not always translate into being a good on-stage player, a good LCS player. So the synergy is so important, so crucial, that it's going to be interesting. I have the strong belief you could put five Faker in the team. If the team is poorly managed, they're not going to win. They're not going to win a split.
Yeah, I mean, that actually brings us right on to something that I wanted to pick your brain on. When it comes to building a team environment, what is the most crucial area of mental preparation or strategy or kind of means of fortifying these players to perform at the highest level? You know, what's the main focus for you when it comes to actually making or helping a team gel together and for them to be resilient to tilt or flexible to criticism in and outside of the game?
Communication.
Okay.
Like improvisation and communication. Like, I don't really believe in patterns. I don't really believe in a book, because we're dealing with humans. We're dealing with humans from different countries, with different background, with different age. So it's a lot about listen how they feel, see how they feel, and try to fix it. And you never have the answer. You never have the solution. You never have the day you are 100% sure about what you're gonna have to do before facing the situation, then you failed basically, because it means you stop listening and you're trying to rush it. And I can see it. Like, we've been efficiently training for a week now, and I've already been facing situations which I've never faced before, and had the chance to work like for 2 years and a half with around 17, 18 different players, and I'm still discovering a lot of stuff, and I will, and I hope I will. I'm sure I will. and it's beautiful, and just because the setup is different, the players are different, the coach is different. Everything is different. It is. They have to be happy. They have to be able to voice their concern, their feeling, and their will, their desire. And it's really hard. And it's a bit easier when players are more mature. I could say older, but it's not true, because some young players are actually more efficient to communicate than some old players. Well, what's to me really interesting, it's actually a real life skill. Like, the way you have to deal with a team is the way you would deal with a team doing any kind of job. That works for marketing, that works for finance, that works for logistics, that works for, that, it's just, if you want humans to be able to work together, they have to be able to communicate with each other. To have the will to exchange information and to receive information. Because everyone wants to speak, but you need to receive stuff at one point. You need to empty yourself if you want to be able to feel yourself. So if you want to put something into a player, you have to empty him first. So you need to make him talk. You need to make him feel. And it's really hard, because how was your game? Good, bad, okay, let's go more. What happened? Because no one can efficiently answer to how do you feel right now.
Of course. It's always like a blend. It's a blend, and everyone's unique and everyone has their own way of expressing themselves. Some people are very empathetic and emotionally intelligent. Some are very closed off. Some might have a big ego, but you know, there's, by the time that you get to the age of 18, which is where most of the League of Legends players are, or older, I would say.
Yeah,
you've got older, you know, right? there's a lot of baggage. You know, no one comes out of 18 years of life without some predispositions towards operating a certain way. And when you bring together those that haven't played together before, relative strangers, then it's always going to be a big process of acclimatizing there and working out how the communication works.
It's like I call it the holidays effect. You know, when you come back from holidays from school and your mom or your dad is asking, how was school? And you just say, good. But actually, like a shitload of stuff happened. You met people, maybe you fell in love, maybe you had bad exam, maybe your friend, you started to fight, whatever. And you will sum up everything with good. Or, yeah. And that's it. Like you need to find a way to make them speak. And most players are, if they are there, like League of Legends is more than 100 million players per month.
Of course.
If you sum up all leagues all around the world, you maybe have 700 pro players playing League of Legends. So if you do the math, it's like 0.00001% of the player base is a pro player. So you have to be the best amongst the best amongst the best. And one of the few options to become the best is to hardcore grind the game, meaning from 13 to 18, for most of them, you have been in your room playing alone or with your friends online. But yeah, you need to be able to cut yourself a bit from real life. So, and as soon as you reach to the highest level, which is the highest level, suddenly you should be able to be a communicant to become the best. Now, it doesn't work like that, obviously. Like, it's really hard to ask this specific population to suddenly turn into someone able to phrase what they are thinking and believing. So, and that's why it's a challenge, and it's really interesting. It's really, really interesting. I love it.
All right, man. Well, I am really, really keen to see how the boys pull together this split, and really keen to see all of the content that you start to push out. We're running up against the end of the clock, so I've just got some quickfire questions for you, and then we'll close with our recurring segment. So, quickfire round. This is something that I kind of want to introduce into the podcast moving forward. So we're not just talking about business, we're talking about life, we're talking about the philosophy and life journey of actually being in and around esports. So the first question is, esports has no working hours. Is there any advice that you can give for anyone working in the space to try and maintain a healthy balance? You know, you've just told me that you haven't slept last night. So, but is there any advice that you can give?
I landed in the US Wednesday night a week ago. Yeah. I think I slept 20 hours. Yeah. So it's absolutely unhealthy. But I'm going to sleep way more soon. But it's not really healthy, but it doesn't matter, because it's like if you start a YouTube channel now trying to do money, it's not going to work, because most of the big successful YouTube channel worked because the guys were doing it by passion. And I ended up working for Razer with a real job, but before that I have been an intern for more than 2 years. On some events I think I was paid 10 cents per hour. So yeah, but you don't do that for money. You don't do that to stay healthy. You just do, just go, just go with the flow. Like it's like when I speak to people and they ask me, yeah, how is esports? Is it good? Yeah, you should go for it, man. And what are the perspective like? Because what are you gonna do in 10 years? What are you gonna do in 15 years? And I'm like, but so you want to start esports right now, but you're already worried what's gonna be the industry in 10 years? Stop right now, man. Stop right now. It's this guy going to the Kung Fu master and he insists in Kung Fu. Oh, okay, that's going to be 1 year. 1 year, it's super long. Okay, for you, it's going to be 5 years. 5 years, I will never make it. Okay, that's going to be 10 years. Like if you're already worried about how long it's going to take, stop it now. So, well, but still, because this is a podcast, we need to give you healthy advice. I'm going to say one I'm not even following myself is sleep. But what? As soon as the season is really starting, actually, my sleepy schedule is on point. Because I do a lot of sports in the morning, and if you want to be able to exercise, you need to sleep. Yeah. Like, sleeping is the main. Sleep and try to leave your phone more than 5 meters from you. Not because of the waves and stuff, like we're all going to die at the end of the day, but because if you go to bed at 1 with your phone with you, you're not going to sleep before 3. Even more if you're in esport, because the amount of content you can check online and stuff is terrible. But sleep. Food, okay. You can adapt. Drink, you can adapt. Alcohol, drugs, whatever you want to do, it's your own life, but sleep. Sleeping. Why? Your brain rests. And that's so important. That's your main. It's like if you want to do sports, you need to do cardio. Why? Yeah, because whatever muscle you're going to train, the heart is the main muscle. For all muscles, you're going to use your heart. So same in any kind of job, actually. It's not only esports. If you want to use your brain, it needs sleep.
So the main message that I'm getting is sleep and drugs. So that's great. Who's been your biggest mentor in the industry? And what was the one biggest lesson that you learned from them?
So you kind of teased me earlier, like 3 days ago with this question. I've been thinking a lot about it. Because my main mentor in life is my dad, by far. The way he sees life, the way his job is basically to be a coach slash consultant specialized into management and motivation.
It all makes sense now.
Yeah, it all makes sense now. And that I'm his best Padawan, obviously, because I've been living, growing, and evolving next to him for the last 25 years, so 30 years. Oh, shit, already. So my dad, by far, he's the one, he's the reason I'm here at the end of the day, biologically first, but mostly because he said, whatever you want to do, go full. Go and enjoy it. If you want to be a porn star tomorrow, you better have fun being a porn star. And maybe not being the best in the world, but you better enjoy it, and you better give it 100%. Whatever you're going to do, he's always saying this Yoda sentence, which is try not do, or do not. There is no try. And it's actually a funny way people are speaking. If someone is answering you, yeah, I'm going to try to, you can be sure they're never going to make it. You do not. And that's something I'm trying to follow as much as I can. In this specific industry, all my managers, I've been extremely lucky, I believe. At Activision, then at Razer, then the Malan with Unicorns of Love, everyone. And now at Infinite, I believe I come from a generation where we grew up with Star Wars, Harry Potter, League of Legends, Lord of the Ring. And it's always the same story. Someone come to you, they pick you up, and you have this old guy. In Star Wars, it's Yoda. In Lord of the Ring, it's Gandalf. In Harry Potter, it's Dumbledore. And you have this figure of the old guy. And if he tells you, let's go to the other end of the world, you're going to follow. Do I have to sacrifice everything I have in my life to do it? I'm going to do it. And I absolutely follow this philosophy, and I've been lucky to meet a couple of people I could follow to the end of the world. On the other hand, if I do not respect my managers, I'm going to be the worst student ever. You can be my super boss on the paper. If I don't respect you, go fuck yourself. You're going to ask me something, I'm not going to do it.
Yeah.
Why? Because at the end of the day, Harry Potter made it by not following the rules. And Frodo made it because he left the fellowship and he ended up on his own, you know. So, and I believe it's not a generation problem. Is if we have a problem with authority because we do not respect it, we're not going to follow the rules. That's in all our books and movies around us. That's not our fault, kind of.
That makes a lot of sense. And it's pretty inspiring stuff. I mean, I completely agree with you with all those examples. Those are kind of challenging and breaking the mold in that way, but leaning on people that you respect is the fastest way to grow. One pretty rare fact that people don't know is that my dad was actually in executive search as well, so I've learned a massive amount from him in my business too, so I feel you. All right, we have really overstayed our welcome. I think my podcast, my producer's going to fly kick me in the mouth if we don't wrap this up soon. So, Roman, thank you so much for the time. Just got one more question for you, which is our fun recurring segment. If you could have any business role or any business idea in esports that you had to start now, if you had to tear up the book and start again, what would you choose and why? Without obviously giving all of your secrets away for what you want to do in a few years.
Wait, first, go Bitcoin. I mean, it's a bit too late now. But
it's a little bit,
related, but virtual reality.
Okay.
I was doubting it. I had the luck to try it on a couple of events, and I got stuck into it so fast. And I do believe virtual reality is going to impact video games. If they don't screw up the technology too hard, no, actually the technology is amazing. If they don't screw up the marketing around it, that's going to be incredible. And esports has something big to play there. Competitive gaming is not going to die ever. It's set in stone now. The way young generations are consuming data/info, we're not reading newspaper, we're not watching TV, we're we're gamers now, so we're going to keep playing. And the people playing now are going to keep playing in 10, 15 years. And their kids are going to play, their wife are going to play, everyone's going to play. What kind of game are they going to play? That's the question people should ask themselves now. And how are they going to compete around it? Like, and it's going to be worldwide. Like, if you want to do esport now, find a way to connect to the company working in live translation at the moment. Because I believe that's the future as well. And that's going to be tied to gaming. Like, those software allowing a Korean guy to instantly translate and talk to an American guy. Like, maybe in 5-10 years, we're all going to be on the same server because the technology is going to lower the ping to 5 wherever you are on the planet.
Yeah, that would be amazing. Yeah.
The day we have one server to rule them all, one server to find them, then this kind of technology for language is going to be interesting. Virtual reality is going to be interesting. Yes. Like either you go in the event aspects of things, but I believe this one has been explored a lot, or you go in the technologic aspects of things.
And I get a feeling that when I come to LA, that all we're going to be doing is quoting Lord of the Rings. I'm pretty sure that's going to be happening. That's an awesome answer. Whenever this technology gets ready, if you want to do the VR Unreal Tournament duo call, I'm one call away on Discord. So you just hit me up, and we'll start tearing up.
Roman, in Discord, technology. Yeah.
It's coming. All right, man. Well, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it. How can everyone reach out to you if they want to get in touch with you on social media?
Twitter, Instagram. I probably have to update my email address on Twitter. But yeah, just DM. My DMs are open on Twitter. I'm really, really, really busy at the moment. So I might be late. Sure. Actually, no, they just reach out to you. And you will give it to me.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's absolutely fine. What's the address for them to?
Romain. Yeah. @ opticgaming.tv.
Awesome, man. Well, that's going to do it for this episode of the podcast. Everyone, thank you very much for tuning in. If you want to reach out to us on social media, I'm @ bellyqualified on Twitter. If you want to hit us up on Facebook, it's LFG Sports HR. If you want to drop me a line directly, it's joehills@ lookingforgroup.lfg.com. Roman, wish you all the best over the start of this split, and I look forward to speaking to you soon.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All the best, man.